Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Good Cast. Oh, it's good to be back. This is episode 19, and it's 2019, and the Good Cast is back. I'm so excited. But hey, a few changes. So I want to let you know about the framework that we're going to be using in 2019 and beyond. So each month on the Good Cast, you will hear from a different guest. I've already interviewed several people. I am so pumped about every single one of them. So you're going to hear from a different guest each month. So make sure you tune in at the beginning of the month to hear that episode. Mid-month, I will be sharing some thoughts and ideas and things that I'm going to be learning throughout this year. This year is going to be an enormous year for me. My wife and I are expecting our first child. Yes! Gonna be so much fun. I'm also going to be studying. It's gonna be hectic. It's gonna be mayhem. And I'm convinced there's going to be things that I'm gonna learn. And as I learn those, I'd love to share those with others. So mid-month, I'll be doing that. Remember that. So each month, new guest, mid-month. Daniel will be sharing some random thoughts about life. It's going to be fun. Now, today's episode, oh my goodness, it comes at the perfect time. We're at the beginning of a year. And at the beginning of a year, we often evaluate things. Now, I don't know if you're like me, but I'm not sure if you've ever felt like, with your faith, hey, there's got to be something more. And the guest today, he recently wrote a book. He's a liturgist, he's a writer and pastor in the Chicago area from the United States. And he recently wrote a book called The Eternal Current, How a Practice-Based Faith Can Save Us from Drowning. I read this book and I loved it. So I reached out to Aaron and I was so glad that he was able to come on the show and chat with us about how a practice-based faith, how learning these different practices and incorporating them into our lives can help make our faith richer. So I encourage you to lean in. I wonder how your faith might change as you engage in these practices. So follow along, and oh, I just remembered, there's something brand new that's coming to the Good Cast this year. Huge thank you to my wife, Demi, for the voiceover, and also Bailey Jeffs for kicking up a rocking soundtrack. Welcome back to the Good Cast. This is episode 19.
You're listening to the Good Cast. We believe there's goodness and beauty all around us. Your host, Daniel Geddes, will help you to rediscover what goodness and beauty in life could look like. It's time to hear from a range of perspectives, listen into honest conversations, and learn how others have found themselves discovering a more meaningful way of life. If you're ready to take the plunge into the messiness of life and wade through questions, doubt, faith, and spirituality, you're in the right place. Here's your host, husband, pastor, teacher, surfer, and craft beer lover, Daniel Geddes.
Well, Aaron, thanks so much for your time, bud. I really appreciate it. And welcome to the Good Cast.
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be with you.
Thanks, man. So you recently wrote Eternal Current. Now, this is a book. Yeah, I love the tagline, how a practice-based faith can save us from drowning. There's two questions I want to ask you in that, but can you first just help us understand what the heck are you talking about? Like, what is a practice-based faith?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean it primarily in context to a beliefs-based faith. And then in contrast, I mean, to a beliefs-based faith.
Okay.
And I think I had grown up, my understanding of the Christian faith was Jesus was saying, believe these four or five facts to be true, say a prayer about them, and then, like, don't do any bad stuff before heaven. You know? And I was like, I don't think that's what I was taught, but that's absolutely what I heard. And it was all about beliefs. Are you right in your brain well, then you're right with God. And first of all, that is nowhere in Jesus' teaching. So I don't know how we kind of imported that in. But second of all, in my experience, it didn't work. Because I was a really like firstborn achiever. Like I got all the tests right. I answered all the questions right. And when I was about 23, my faith just ended. And it's like it ran out of gas. Like, great. I have all the answers right. I passed the tests. Who cares? And it kind of propelled me into there's got to be more than just a beliefs-based system. And that kind of led me into a more practice-based faith.
What do you mean that your faith ended or that things fell apart? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I was a worship leader. It was my first job out of college. And I was a worship leader at a pretty large church and kind of leading worship every Sunday night with this band. And it was really exciting. And I remember it was a couple Sundays in a row where I'm like, I don't think I believe any of these songs. And now it's my job. Like I'm getting paid to lead songs I barely believe anymore. And so it's just this weird season. It wasn't like crisis where now I don't believe because of that reason. It's just like it ran out of gas. I think I say in the book, it's like an air conditioner just blowing warm air.
Yeah.
And it was over. It was such an interesting and then really scary experience.
How did you match that? So you have your belief that your feeling is crumbling around you, like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I believe this anymore. But then is there also this contrast or this compelling desire to still know God? Or are you kind of like, I don't believe this anymore, like I'm doubting, or I'm throwing God out of the picture?
Yeah.
Or was there still this hunger for this depth? What did it look like?
Yeah, I don't think I was flirting with like true atheism, like there is no God, there's nothing beyond us. Although I have a number of friends who needed to go through that experience to move into a deeper experience of God. So I don't think that's always even the wrong path. But for me, it wasn't that. It was honestly, it's like, who cares? Like this is all it is. Like just believe stuff. And then like in my circles, don't drink or smoke or have sex before you're married. Like that's the whole story. And so it was like, yeah, I don't know if it's true, but I don't care. It was so weird. I was such like a good Christian my whole life. And now I was a professional Christian and I couldn't find a reason to care.
So were you married at that point as well?
I had just, let's see. I think we were engaged. We had just been dating and we were just, almost engaged at that point.
Okay. And how did Shona find this crisis?
Yeah, thankfully, she wasn't overly freaked out. This wasn't I think she was just kind of like, you know, she entered into it with me.
Yeah.
And would listen and we'd have conversations, but thankfully it didn't like trigger, you know, big fears in her or something. So,
Mate, thank you so much for sharing that because I think that there are people out there I've had conversations with who are in a similar space. Like what?
Oh, absolutely.
What does this all mean? Like, I don't even know if I believe that anymore. And I feel like we push that down or we say, no, I can't feel that. I shouldn't feel that.
Yeah.
So we kind of almost deny that feeling. We just continue, but the feeling never goes away. We don't actually confront it. So how did you confront it and how did that lead to this discovery of something bigger than just I believe or I believe the right things?
How did you discover this
other way?
Yeah, it was a series of conversations with a couple different friends who were not like trying to fix me. Like I didn't want to be fixed, but were trying to walk with me and really engage these questions. And they weren't freaked out. And one of them eventually gave me a book, The Divine Conspiracy by Dallas Willard. And I literally remember where I was sitting when I read for the first time about the kingdom of God, Jesus' teaching. And I remember thinking, like, you know, the more I dive into this, the more I realized this was Jesus' central message. Mm. And I'd been a Christian for 20-something years, and I'd never heard it. Like, how is that possible? As a Christian, I'd never heard Jesus' central message. And so, like, through that book and these conversations, I came to realize, like, Jesus' invitation is not believe some stuff. It's join me in the redemption and restoration of this world. Like, participate with what I'm doing to make things whole, to... I mean, just, it was this like throwing the doors open, throwing every window open, turning every light on. And it was like God saying, Aaron, you are invited to join me. And not only you, every single person on earth, you are all invited. So let's make something together. I mean, it's just this, and it was, you know, I think I joked in the book, like a true evangelical, I was born again, and again, just again and again and again. And what's funny, it's happened again and again, you know, it keeps happening. And I wonder if that's the way it's supposed to be, you know, or just reborn, and reborn. But it was quite a profound experience. But then here, what happened is it propelled me into these new questions and this new understanding and this new passion and this new hunger, but I didn't know what to do. Mm. So great. I have a new mental framework, you know, is it, and I had to ask these questions. Is this just a new idea-based faith? You know, is this just a new idea? And then a year later, I'll move on. Thankfully, it's been 20 years, and it hasn't, the grip of this kingdom invitation hasn't left yet. But it was because I had a couple brilliant teachers and loving teachers and humble teachers who said, let me teach you not to just believe about this kingdom, but here are some practices to participate in this kingdom. And that made kind of all the difference.
Do you remember what was one of the first practices that you, I don't know, I'm just picturing going back to those moments possibly and going like, what do I do? Almost like, you know, Carol in the movie. I think it's that Raising God movie, his hands just like keep going up.
Oh yeah. I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah, but it's like that. Like you're discovering new things. You're like, what do I even do with these? Like what was some of the first ones that you played around with?
Oh, absolutely. Well, what's interesting, and I think I did it a little backwards. I probably should have done it the other way, but because my job was worship leader, a lot of the initial experimentation happened in our community, like all together. So that's when I was a worship leader at Mars Hill Church in Grand Rapids. And we were just saying, all right, we can't just like five pop songs and a hymn. Like that can't be all we do when we come together. Like the story is so much bigger and deeper and wider. Mm-hmm. And so we started saying, all right, how can we worship God beyond only singing? So we'd still sing and we, you know, that was still a part of the worship. But so we'd say, what would it be like to not just sing this song written from a hymn? I mean, written from a psalm, but let's read the whole psalm together. And again, that sounds so basic, but I don't think I'd ever been in a church service where we read an entire psalm together. Mm. So we'd read it and just let that text, you know, sometimes it'd take 4 or 5 minutes and just let the whole thing wash over us. And then we'd sing the song. Mm. Or that's when we started engaging a confession and then an assurance, and where we'd kind of hold the reality of our sin in God's presence, but then we'd receive the words, you know, as far as the east is from the west, so far as your sin. And I started realizing, like, wait a second, I think I actually made a joke to one of my colleagues at the time. I was like, man, we're doing like this brand new way of worshiping God together. And he's like, Yeah, I think it's called the liturgy. I think Christians have been doing this for generations and generations.
Yeah.
And so, you know, embarrassingly, I had to say, I don't know about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And so we just started to explore. What is our Anglican, what do our Anglican brothers and sisters have to teach us? What do our charismatic brothers and sisters, our Pentecostal brothers and sisters, you know, sometimes they freak me out. And sometimes they open me up to something that I didn't even know was there. Mm. What do our Catholic brothers and sisters have to teach us? What, you know, and just started learning and learning and learning. And then to your original question, it started to seep into my kind of private life. And what do I do when I pray? All I had at that point was a quiet time, which is just in our circles was just read the Bible for 10 minutes, journal about it, and then you can kind of go on with your day. Well, it's actually a great practice, and I still do it, but it wasn't nearly enough for the complexities of my life. And so began to learn all these other practices, and it's just opened up all this new space.
That's cool. What are some of the practices that you engage in now, I guess, in that time as you get up in the morning?
One of the big ones, and it was so hard, and it's still hard. I don't want to admit how bad I am at it, but it's centering prayer.
Yeah.
It's silence. And the teachers say, to get into a rhythm of 20 minutes a day where you carve out space. And what's beautiful is centering prayer gives you a framework. You usually have a word that you're praying and to create this space. But it's this terrifying, holy silence where we let go of our kind of white knuckled grip on words. You know, I'm going to tell God what I think. I'm going to convince God, you know, God, this is what you should do about that person I'm mad at. You know, like where we let go of all that we think we're controlling. We're not, of course, but all that we think that we're controlling, and let God do whatever God wants to do.
Can you help people who never discovered centering prayer, contemplative prayer? Like, what is that? Like, okay, so is the centering prayer like me just praying to God, talking to God? Like, I think that's how a lot of sometimes prayer is communicated. We talk to God. We petition, we give thanks.
Yep.
You know, but what's this? What do you mean?
And all of those things you said are such powerful and important parts of prayer. But centering prayer is actually trying to move one layer deeper than words. You know, where the scriptures talk about our spirits groan. And, you know, that kind of thing. And so, frankly, where I discovered this was after one of the real kind of heartbreaks that my wife and I experienced. And we haven't had, you know, real tragic experiences in our lives, but we've had a couple really painful seasons. And in one of them, we were reeling after something really hurtful had happened. And I was leaving for a 3-week just break to try to see if I could even, you know, stay in the situation we were in. And someone had given me a book on centering prayer. And it was one of those times where I'm like, I don't know what to say to God right now. But thankfully, this book is saying you don't have to figure out what to say. You just have to, if you follow this very simple practice and sit in God's presence without saying anything. And again, it probably sounds so overly weird or new age or, you know, like some sort of crazy thing. But I committed, and just out of desperation, not out of like, well, I'm so holy, I'm going to do this. No, I am so desperate. I'm going to do this for 21 straight days. Mm. And it was 20 minutes a day, 21 straight days.
So you Wait. You started with 20 minutes?
20 minutes. Oh, yeah.
You started going, all right, I'm going to give this 20 minutes.
It's the
You didn't
the,
start with the, like, okay, let's do three. Let's do
no,
four.
No, I should have. Yeah, I should have. And if I was smarter, I would have started exactly like you're saying. Never start with 20 minutes. That's crazy.
That's awesome.
So, but what it was is, again, it was desperation. I was losing my, I was losing something. I was angry, and I wanted to, I wanted to get vengeance on someone who had hurt us. And I was in a bad place, and there was no amount of journaling that was going to fix that. You know, I didn't have words to describe what I was experiencing. And so this very simple practice that's been around for generations and generations helped me just hold space, for God to do whatever God wanted to do. And the first week was terrible. It was miserable. I was bad at it. I'm still bad at it. But the second week, something started to shift. And I actually looked forward to the morning where I got to do these 20 minutes. And then by the third week, I don't think it's supposed to work this way, but by the third week, I started to have some feelings of forgiveness. Not completely, but it started to open up. And I was like, oh my goodness, God is doing something in me that I never could have done myself. Well, again, just the brilliance of a simple practice. So
that's cool. I love it how, like, we all, and I mean, I'm sure you've done a lot in the Enneagram and that, but I love it how there's a lot of these things that we can engage in that can actually be helpful for us in our faith and in our walk with God. And, you know, for some people that revelation of forgiveness may be, maybe a moment of prayer, maybe someone praying, it may be a story, it may be, that's the thing is that we all need these different elements. It's not throwing out one. It's about, hey, how can we learn and gather and grow in these, in these other spaces? I mean, just yesterday I was praying for someone, and I'm in the middle of prayer, and I'm just like, Lord, I don't even know what to say. And I just, I didn't even intentionally have a moment of centering prayer. I was just like, because I know those feelings when you just, you don't even know how to pray anymore. And you just, and that's where I think some of the common book, you know, some of the prayers in that from our fathers who've gone before us are helpful. But sometimes just silence.
Yeah,
so hard for me. I'm a seven. Is. Like,
oh my gosh. Like, oh, are you really? Okay.
Let's dance. Let's
do some stuff.
I don't want to sit here and not do anything. But it's it's, and I think my biggest fear in it as a seven is I don't trust myself, and that's where centering prayer and that silence is helpful in that space. So I'm still learning it, man. But it's
Well, we are all so addicted to the noise in our brains.
Yeah.
And we don't even like it necessarily, but when that, when we're confronted with quiet to be able to notice it, at first it's so scary. And we, I mean, if like me, I usually like, I go to either, I'm going to grab something to eat, drink, or drink some coffee. Like coffee's a great distraction, or I'm going straight to Twitter or just like anything to take my mind off that kind of crazy brain that's going. But these, some of these practices, this, the quiet and the silent ones, create space for us to first feel that and then let it dissipate. And it really does. But
what's so cool too is you're not, you know, what I really loved about reading through your book is, you know, you shared that story and it's like, okay, so this centering prayer moment didn't just, it wasn't just a moment of like airy fairy reflection. It actually led to one of the most difficult decisions you've ever made, but one of the most beautiful decisions you've ever made as well. So there's this this transforming power that happens in that, the mysterious transforming power that happens in that space. And you do miss out on it if we don't step into it.
It's exactly right. Can I just say, maybe can I do like just share 60 seconds about the main metaphor of the book?
Because
that might help us talk about these specific practices. You know, the title is The Eternal Current, and the main metaphor is there is this great river flowing throughout human history in and through every single person on earth toward the redemption and restoration of all things. Yeah. And the insight is Jesus called this the kingdom of God, this great movement that is flowing. But Jesus didn't say, believe about it. Jesus didn't say, believe the river exists. Jesus said, learn to swim with me in it. You know, the invitation is participation. And so basically, these simple spiritual practices are all simple ways to help us swim with Christ in this river. So I like to say, do we cause the river to flow? Absolutely not. It's already flowing. God is already doing everything. But we really do need to get into the water. Do we earn our way into the river? Like, is God saying, well, let's see if he or she is going to do that practice correctly. No, we're already invited. The practice is just how we kind of stay afloat. And so it's kind of it's a very simple analogy, but it gets us out of that. We convince God to do something, you know, God's already doing it.
Yeah.
A practice just helps us participate.
And I love that, because I think that the river, that, like, as I was reading it, I was envisioning the river flowing out of the temple in, I think it's Ezekiel.
Oh, yes.
Like, man, everything great image. That it touches just comes to life. And as I'm reading it, I loved how you're like, you know, it is this eternal current, but this eternal current is for the sake of the world. It's not like, hey, we're just going on this spiritual journey, just like, you know, supernatural times. No, there's a purpose, and it's for the sake of the world. So that was really cool.
The sake of the world. Oh, good. I mean, Jesus started his ministry by reading from the scroll, you know, the Spirit is upon me. And so what is the river doing?
Yeah.
It is giving sight to the blind. It is healing the broken.
Yeah.
It is lifting up and setting free the oppressed. I mean, that's what this river is doing. Yeah. And so it's not making the world more religious. It's making the world more free, more whole. You know, Dr. King famously said, the arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice. That is a kingdom philosophy. That is a kingdom vision of this river. And so we get to participate with that.
And the belief is, like, you know, because some would say, well, belief is everything. And we're having this conversation saying, well, belief is important. Belief in Christ is important, but belief in Christ leads you to jump into the river. Not
absolutely
to stand by and just go, well, I believe the river's there, but to
actually
jump into it.
Beliefs are, and that's a good clarification. No one is saying beliefs don't matter. I mean, so much of what we're talking about right now are beliefs, but they are the means. They are not the end.
Yeah, that's good.
In fact, one thing that I never had realized, but when you read Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, you know, starts with the Beatitudes, Matthew 5, 6, 7. I'm just one of the most compelling freight train of a message we've ever heard. The final paragraph says, if you hear these words and put them into practice, you'll be like a man who's built his house upon the rock.
So good.
So, I mean, even Jesus didn't get to the end of his sermon and say, if you believe this is all true. No, he said, if you put these into practice. And that is just such a paradigm shift for someone like me who grew up in where correct thinking was the highest goal.
So. We're doing this series right now at the church I'm at, and it's all based on Deuteronomy. He's like, I put before you life, I put before you death.
Oh, yeah.
Life. And it's this revelation, because I grew up too with this idea, okay, I've chosen life, so now what do I do?
That's good.
Now it's more like, no, choose life every moment, choose life.
Every day.
Every day, choose life. And I think that's where our faith is sort of muddled in some spaces of Christianity, because it's like, but I've already done that, so like now I'm good. It's like, you know, we're continually invited to jump in the river, to participate with God, to put these things into practice. It's good, man. Hey, I wanted to ask you. So this was a really cool thing you mentioned in your book. And I'm hugely encouraging people to grab this book and get a hold of it. But you talked about church as a gymnasium. Now,
yeah.
Let's chat a little bit about that for a moment. What do you mean? I mean, it's kind of funny because I work at a community center, so we actually have a gymnasium. But I'm thinking you're doing it a different way.
Yeah. Well, that chapter starts with kind of a silly story, a silly analogy, but it's like, say you one day you decide, hey, I'm a little out of shape. I want to run a marathon. Mm. You know, I'm going to sign up nine months from now. I'm going to run this marathon. So you go to the local fitness center and you say, would you help me get in shape and run this marathon? They're like, oh, wonderful. We'd love to help you. So they say, come to this room in the back. We have this band that's going to lead you in some singing. And then we have a marathon expert who's going to give a 45-minute lecture on marathons. Mm. And you're like, well, it's not what I expected, but, you know. And it's wonderful. It's a great experience. You learn a ton. But then they say, come back next week. Let's do it again. Come back next week. Let's do it again. And you realize your brain is getting full of all this marathon knowledge, but your legs aren't any closer to being able to run 26.2 miles. And so I just use that as a simple analogy to say our idea of church as classroom really can only get us so far. A brain full of information doesn't actually change our lives. Again, beliefs are important, but they're not the end goal. And even a great experience with music and beauty, church as kind of concert hall, I don't think can change us from the inside out. It's church as gymnasium. So back to the river, say we've become compelled by this idea that we're all in this river and it's sweeping toward this beauty and redemption and healing of the world. And so we come together on a Sunday or whenever we meet as a community and say, all right, we're fellow swimmers. Let's practice ways that we can stay afloat in the current. And so one week it'll be centering prayer. One week it'll be praying for the world. One week it'll be a scripture practice. One week it will be learning about Sabbath. One week it'll be the examine. And we learn all these different almost swimming techniques that help us join Christ in that current. So,
and how did you begin to weave these into? So did you, was this something that you started at a church, or did you sort of weave this into a service that was already happening?
Yeah, at first I tried to bring this into a kind of the worship time at a church.
Space.
Yeah, very contemporary. And a couple of the things really connected, and a couple of the moments were disastrous, and it didn't totally work. But thankfully, that church said, hey, we're probably not going to do those things here, but we know people need it. And so they launched us to start a Sunday night gathering that we just called The Practice. And we said, we want to be a community who doesn't just believe things about Jesus, but learns how to rearrange our lives in order to put his words into practice. And so every night we would explore a new practice. Tonight we're going to learn about breath prayer. And so we'd have someone who had been practicing breath prayer for many, many years come up, a little about it, the biblical basis for it, what it's trying to do, how it helps us stay in the current. And then there was always that moment in the gathering where we say, all right, now let's practice, you know, because it's a gymnasium. We're not just, it's not a class, not just a classroom. It's a gymnasium. So let's do it. And so we'd spend 15 or 20 minutes, that person guiding us through, this is breath prayer, here's how you do it. And when you can learn in the safety of a community,
yeah,
you know, you try some things and, you know, and not every practice works for every person, nor should it. And so there's some nights we'd do something, and even I would be like, probably not going to do that ever. But there are other nights that we'd do something that I would say, that would change my whole life if I ever would give my time to it. So
that's cool. And so,
yeah.
And now you're weaving in, you mentioned in the book, the confession. I remember the first time that I led that at our community. It was like, you know, where he just says, you know, we confess our sins for the things that we've done and the things we've left undone.
Yes, left
just
undone.
This, because oftentimes we associate sin as the things that we've done, but then the things we haven't love that person. And
yep.
And it's is that an element, the confession, is that an element in every practice?
Every single Sunday.
Yep. And the Eucharist, the communion table is as well.
And every gathering coming to the table. Yeah. And let me just say something about confession. You know, in my circles growing up, we never did that. Like, no. We only talked about sin if we were thanking God for forgiving us from it, you know, mm-hmm. but otherwise we never named the reality. But when I looked around at almost all the other Christian traditions, they all had this moment where we humbly named what we know is true.
Yeah.
And that is, God, I have fallen short again. And it's not a shame thing.
No.
It's a reality thing.
Yeah.
Dallas Willard says he has a really simple definition of humility: reality.
Mm.
And I just think that's so beautiful. So the confession is just naming what God and I both know is true. Yeah. But it doesn't end with confession. It then moves to an assurance, yeah, where someone stands up and proclaims over us, you are already forgiven. Yeah. There's nothing you need to do or could ever do. You know, it's a really beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And again, in each service, that's a nice, you know, 4 or 5 minute experience. But you do this week after week after year after year, and it forms you from the inside out. Mm. So, yeah.
And I think it's such a powerful thing too, because so often we feel there's this, we can have this aloneness feeling in our sin, but I think the confession is this: we as a community, like,
yes,
we have,
yes,
sinned against you.
There's
this we-ness to our sin.
And that is so good.
Almost brings this,
yep,
freedom from anxiety, or freedom having, yep, to be this, you know, that, as you were talking earlier, I was the right, perfect Christian.
Yeah, that's right.
It frees us from that and invites us into this humility space where then we as a community can then receive. And
absolutely.
Man, it's good. I love that. Yeah. I love that. That analogy of a gymnasium, like, bothered me. Like, it bothered,
okay,
me in a, yeah, good way.
And
I think because, you know, as we're looking at our services, and we're kind of looking at how we're moving forward, and we're continually trying to ask these questions as well. How can we create a space that's more helpful for people, yeah, in their journey to discover Christ and,
yeah,
how he has saved them and brought them to heal the world?
Yep.
And that analogy of a gymnasium was like, it annoyed me because I was like, how true? Like, huh, you're going to run a marathon. Fantastic. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
But when are we going to run together?
Sure.
You know, yep, and so that really, yep, what's, yeah, your recommendation? Because I know there's people out there who are listening to this, and maybe they're working in a church, or maybe they're in a church.
Yeah.
How do people start to see or move towards that reality of a more of a gymnasium space where we can, yep, actually practice these things?
Or, yeah. The first step is always something really small.
Mm.
And I know I've pushed too hard too quickly many times.
You're like, 20 minutes of silence, everybody.
That's right. Yeah, here we go. And I've made that mistake many times. But what we did at Mars Hill was actually a better plan. We said, every Sunday, we're going to have one non-singing worship experience. And sometimes it was really small. Sometimes it was just an open space to pray. Sometimes it was a poem. Sometimes it was a reading. But that began us on the journey beyond singing.
Mm.
You know, I think up to that point, my question for Sunday morning was, what 5 songs are we going to sing?
Yeah.
And it began to shift to, what worship journey are we going to go on together? And so a lot of that would involve music, but not all of it. And so just shifting that question. So maybe that's even a pre-answer to your question. Try to shift the question from, what 5 songs are we going to sing, to, what worship journey are we going to go on? And once you kind of name that arc or that experience, then you try to discern, all right, how do we do that? Well, I think this song could help us do that. Well, I think reading this would actually really help us do that. Maybe a story from someone about forgiving her neighbor would really help us do that. And then suddenly you have a little more robust experience. So
that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Aaron, just quickly. Where is a question that I often sit with myself. What do you think is a, what do you see? Here's a good question for you, a doozy to sit with.
Yeah.
20 years from now, where do you see the church?
Oh my goodness. Man, you know, it's crazy. I don't know how to answer that 5 years from now. And maybe this is, I'm pretty sure this is more true in the U.S. as it is all over the world, but things are imploding here, mm-hmm. and specifically related to American Christianity. And if you really want to focus in, white evangelical American Christianity. And it is, I really don't know what will be true 5 years from now. I think a lot is ending right now. I think it's going to be really painful, but potentially really good. Mm. Resurrection only can happen after death. And so there is that Paschal mystery of life, you know, birth, life, death, new life. So I think a lot of that is happening. I will say, and I've mentioned Dallas Willard a couple times, so it feels fitting to quote him once more, mm-hmm. but one of my friends was asking him, they were talking about some of the troubles in the American church, and this was maybe 10 years ago, and just said, Dallas, how do you not lose hope in the church, you know? And apparently Dallas just kind of leaned his head back and he says, I don't worry about the church. The gates of hell will not prevail against the church. Yeah. But then he paused and he said, but a lot of 501c3s are going to close their doors.
What's and a 501c3?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. 501c3 is just the legal, the government number for a church. Like if you're a 501c3, okay. you register with the government as a
right.
church.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that was a terrible international example. Sorry about that. But his point was the church, big C,
yeah.
is going to be fine. God yeah. is not concerned about how we screw this up.
Yeah.
But a lot of little C churches are going to end. And that, even if it's the right thing in the big picture, that's going to be really, really painful. Mm. And, so yeah, we'll see. I was just talking to a friend about this, and I had to confess. I said, long term, I'm really, really hope filled about the way of Jesus in even America, but in the world. Mm-hmm. But short term, I am very pessimistic or bracing myself for these next couple of years. So I hope that's not ending the podcast on too negative of a
no.
note.
But. Well, I think as you said, I mean, death is an uncomfortable thing.
Yeah.
But we don't see resurrection without it.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think yep. that there is this, I mean, in Australia, we have churches closing down left, right, and center. I just got back from a,
yep.
a conference where they're giving us the data and they're pretty much handing us this question. What are you guys going to
mm-hmm.
do?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, it was a very
yeah.
telling space of where yeah. our reality is, our current reality, and not weaseling our way out of it by going, oh, but yeah, right. we're growing, or yeah, but they're
right.
no, but
right.
the church as a whole, there's something.
Yep.
But then there's this also space that I think is opening up that's an openness, especially in Australia. I'm not sure about the States, but in Australia, yeah. this huge openness to having a conversation about spirituality, having a conversation
yeah.
about
yeah.
something that is behind this thing, the thing behind yeah. the thing.
And, yeah, that's right. That's right.
And I feel like that is exciting. I feel yeah. like that
yeah.
is a Mars Hill kind of moment where it's like, hey, yeah. let's talk about that idol to yeah. an unknown God and let's hang out yep. in that space. But I think what I loved about your book is is I think a lot of those practices can almost be introduced in those spiritual conversations without necessarily the tick this, tick this, tick this.
That's so true.
This is kind of like, I don't know. I get excited when I think about the future of the church, but there's also this daunting lament, I would say, in where we see things, some things going. But that's why I recommend pastors, I recommend leaders to grab a hold of your book, because I think that it is something that can be helpful as we work. I mean, we're all working out what it looks like to be God's children, and you know, to be in this river. We're still working out what that looks like, and I think your book is a helpful tool.
Oh, thanks. There's a lot of people doing deconstruction right now, and frankly, I think it's really important work. And so I'm really thankful for it. But I wanted this book to be relentlessly constructive, like almost like if you haven't given up on Christ, even if you're having a really hard time figuring out how to do that at a church or, you know, informal, if you haven't given up, here are some ways to not give up. You know, I really want it to be constructive. I hope it's helpful.
Yeah. And I felt like that's, you know, in the very beginning, you talked about your crisis that you experienced, but then the whole rest of the book is reconstruction. It's working. Yeah. Okay. Let's continue to move forward. And I found it. Yeah. I found it really helpful. So thanks for taking the time to.
Absolutely. So good to talk to you. Yeah.
For sure. No, that's
absolutely.
Cool. You'll have to get out to Australia sometime.
I would love to come back. I would love it. So
have to come to the Sunshine Coast
someday. I know.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, man. Well, there you have it, friends. Now you're equipped with a few spiritual practices to begin engaging in 2019. Remember, don't bite off more than you can chew. Just pick one or two of them and commit to practicing those daily. And also, if you want to check out Aaron's book, it is a fantastic read. Thanks again for listening.
Thanks for listening to The Good Cast. Dive into the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at danielgettys.com. If you love the show, make sure you share it with a friend. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.